And commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
It's time again for Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio with the latest news and conversation related to firearms and your Second Amendment rights. Sponsored by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. And now, Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in throughout the hour to join us, 458-8255-458-TALK. What is on your mind about firearms today? It is a beautiful day in Fairbanks. The sun is shining and the temperature is 28 degrees. And Melissa is here in the studio with me running the board. Thank you, Melissa. And of course, if you miss a program, she keeps the archives up to date. You will find the recording there within about 24 hours. So what's on our agenda today? We have a guest, Norm, who I will turn over the program to in just a few minutes. And Norm has put together a petition concerning the Fairbanks North Star Borough South Cushman Range renovation project. Good morning, Norm.
Good morning.
And I thought it was important that Norm come on Shooter's Corner and share this information with you. So in a few minutes, he will tell you about the petition, where you can find a copy to sign and answer any questions you might have. He'll be with us the whole hour. And actually, before Norm called me last night about this, I had prepared a short editorial rant about the South Cushman Range, having been there Friday and Saturday and quickly leaving. And listeners, you are saved from my rant because Norm, instead of talking in frustration as I was going to, is actually doing something proactive about the situation. And after that, we'll discuss history, the Red Baron, the real Red Baron, not Snoopy's arch enemy. And then I'll use the rest of our time to continue delving into our multi-week discussion on Dr. Gav Schneider's book, Can I See Your Hands? A Guide to Situational Awareness, Personal Risk Management, Resilience, and Security. Now, I've learned a lot of useful information from this book, as well as new ways to think about self-protection, and I want to share all of that with you. And so we'll spend the parts of the next few Shooter's Corner programs on material in this book. Norm, thank you so much for taking the time to come to the studio today. If I understand correctly, you've met with members at the borough trying to get answers to questions about the South Cushman renovation project. I personally have not been able to discern when there was a public comment period allowed after the concept was drawn for the public to see. So before you get into the meat of things here, can you tell our listeners just a little bit about your involvement in the shooting sports and the shooting community in Fairbanks?
Yes, I can. It actually started before I was here in Fairbanks. I grew up shooting, so it was just part of our Minnesota farm culture. Excuse me. I've been here about 50 years, which is about how long the range has existed. I have shot quite a bit of bullseye target, the NRA program when it was active, or in its first generation of activity in Fairbanks. I've shot quite a bit of skeet. I'm a compulsive reloader. I tell people at the range, compulsive obsessive. And I just spend a lot of time at the range. It's my second home. I enjoy it. I've had lots of good experiences out there. You should start by thanks for having me on. This is an opportunity this whole issue needs.
Well, I am glad you're doing what you're doing, and I'm glad you called me about it. And I think it's important. So you want to get into the meat of things?
I'll do a little dissertation here on what has happened over the last couple of years and how it basically got us to where we are now and what we are now trying to do about it. So in March of 2020, the Borough Parks and Rec basically solicited from local organizations who would be interested support for a Pittman Robertson project to improve the shooting range out on South Cushman. The organizations all thought, sure, that's a wonderful idea. It needs improvement. It operates at capacity much of the time, or enough time, that capacity becomes a problem. So they got support, and I was part of one of the organizations that gave them support. I actually drafted the letter. They described the project as, at that time, they were describing what they wanted to do as one of increasing the footprint to accommodate three berms, one down either side and one down the center, without shrinking the shooting line. And that was good. And there was also talk of filling in the two swampy ponds on either side of the existing pad. And it would give people more pad to walk out on, to operate on, to put targets up on, to access more the distant berms. Mm-hmm. But it just was a good, the pad is a valuable part of that range, and they were going to increase the size of it. Anyway, 2 years later, they've now put out a project. It's under contract. It happened without the shooters even really knowing anything about it, which actually shrinks the firing line, reduces its capacity, and not only doesn't fill in the pond areas, it takes out the existing gravel pad and reverts them to more pond area. So basically, there will be no gravel pad out in front of the shooting line. That got my attention.
Yeah.
And this, they developed that project in the process of now shrinking the, building the three berms on the existing footprint. We will lose about 25% of the shooting line. They metamorphosed this project from one of a range improvement to what it is now with zero public involvement. Nobody at the range knew what was going on. I'd often get asked, you know, what the plan was, and I would tell them that as far as I understood, it was the plan that I initially had heard. And I was just fat and happy going along, figuring this is what was going to happen. You can imagine how surprised I was when we got a project that did pretty much just the opposite. They're using Pittman-Robertson funds, which are intended to improve shooting ranges. And the Pittman-Robertson program is funded by taxes on things as guns and ammo. It's intended to serve the shooting community. I think, well, let me digress a little bit. I've talked to a lot of people out there since this project came out, since the shooters became aware of what it was that Parks and Recreation was actually doing. And to the person, after we got done with the profanity, when they realized what was happening, to the person, they agree that they would rather see the range stay as it is than see it shrunk in size and see their gravel pad taken out. Just the shooters are solid on that. So what we've done, just a couple of us picked up on this as the borough was processing their contract, or going through the borough approval process of that contract. We picked up on it and just sort of got mad. It made no sense what they were doing. It was this huge step backwards for the shooters. So we put together a petition. It happened pretty quickly. It has to happen quickly because the range is scheduled to shut down May 15th and go into construction, and we will lose 3 months of this summer in terms of shooting at the range. Anyway, the petition is asking that the project be put on hold until they can back up and design it in a positive fashion and expose it to some public involvement, which didn't happen in the first place. What happened here was the borough has designed a project that basically meets their administrative needs as they see them, but doesn't serve the shooting public well at all. They're just not interested in it. It's frustrating to watch them make it be something that they need it to be. And I can understand that they have things that they need to do out there, and I can hope that we can come up with a project that will accommodate them, but they can't do it at the expense of the purpose for that range.
Let's go ahead and go to our first break.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Hi, Steve with Auto Trim Design here. When I hear lights and sirens, I'm reminded of how fortunate we are to have our dedicated and heroic response personnel watching over us. Because many times, someone's life is on the line. Chances are we've installed those lights and equipped that vehicle with sirens, comms, and cameras. I'm proud that my team is picked for the dependable installations they need, as it shows how dependable our work is at Auto Trim Design. So if you're looking for accessories to outfit your personal rig, depend on the best. Depend on Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
It's time to get out and play with Arctic RV. Time to get your magic carpet to the Alaskan experience on the road. Need parts? Arctic RV has the largest RV parts and accessories selection in the interior. See row after row of every RV part and gadget you can imagine in their huge showroom. Need some TLC in the shop? Schedule your appointment now. Get ready and go. Rough it in style. Arctic RV, your hometown RV sales and service at 30th and Pegger.
Weather brought to you by the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks. Your eyes connect you to your world. Care for them with the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks, your eye health professionals on Mini Street.
KFAR weather.
Clear skies today with daytime highs approaching 49. Easterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Clear skies and quiet tonight, lows around 31. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow, high of 52. Temperatures above average Saturday and Sunday with highs in the mid-50s. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley. Currently, it's 29 degrees.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz and our guest Norm, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255-458-TALK. Let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. And if you want to talk about the South Cushman Range Project, call in. And we have a caller. Caller, you're on the line with Laura and Norm.
Good morning. This is Al.
Hi, Al.
Yeah, Norm, I'm fairly familiar with Pittman Roberts money. So who at the, I believe it would have had to have been the Fish and Game, would have had to approve the matching funds from the borough?
Yeah, I know the money is actually comes through Fish and Wildlife Service as federal money. Fish and Wildlife Service, Fish and Game, and then to the applicant.
Right.
You know, through that process. But I don't know to what extent the Fish and Game actually approves the design. I have talked to Fish and Game, and in the Pittman-Robertson scheme of things, and they're sympathetic with what we've got here, but they're also bureaucratic in that they're not going to jump up and say, hey, stop. Not until somebody tells them that they have to jump up and say, hey, stop.
Right. That's what I was kind of getting at. Yeah. Because if you're familiar, you know, there's people in the community that are, you know, have contacts with headquarters at Fish and Game, and they may not, you know, be totally aware of what all transpired and not having a formal public notice or you know, public comment in on a project.
Well, and I went right to Fish and Game and to Fish and Wildlife Service, and I asked them the two questions. One, can Pittman-Robertson money be used to reduce the capacity of a range, which I thought it could not be? And two, does it, as federal funding, does it have to involve a public involvement process? And I never really got answers to from either one, so I went to Senator Sullivan's office and asked the same questions, and they're still working on an answer.
So. Well, I mean, projects get, you know, people apply for that Pittman-Roberts money, and there may be a stipulation. You may be shrinking the range, but it may be improving it at the same time. It doesn't sound like it in this case by any means, and it was the old bait and switch. You know, somebody agreed on your letter and then came up with a design, and then in the end, it wasn't anything near what anybody agreed to.
And that's exactly what happened here. I forgot my little train of thought, which is too easy to do at my
age. But let me just interject. I know when this first started about, it seemed like it was almost 3 years ago, because the borough, someone at the borough had contacted different organizations probably the same time you were contacted. And I was president of AIMCOM at the time, and so I was contacted. And the big selling point was, I think, the handicap access. And so I'm wondering if, just what you said, if those improvements sort of got morphed into, those are improvements, but they got morphed into this other project.
Well, there are improvements in the project, and ADA access is one of them.
Yeah.
An outhouse is another. A dumpster would be another. I mean, the whole thing isn't rotten, but the basic project itself has
right.
something,
and
leave something
nobody bizarre. Nobody explained if there was an appeal process.
No, there was no public involvement process, and I'm not aware of any appeal process built into the program.
Okay. Well, I'll do some checking on my end, too, and see what I can come up with, Norm.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that.
All right.
Appreciate any energy we can get.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very, very much. Okay.
Okay. What I was going to do was just let people know where we have this petition out and, where they can go to participate. Yesterday afternoon, I brought copies to Iron and Wood, to Alaska Ammo, and to Sportsman's Warehouse. And as soon as we're off the air here, I'm going to run it to Frontier Outfitters and Big Rays. And if anybody can think of any place else it belongs, I'm gladly entertain that. If anybody...
Okay. Caller, you are on the line with Laura and Norm.
Hi, my name's Mike.
Hi, Mike.
I want to thank Norm for bringing this up for the town to hear about. I was at a meeting yesterday where Norm was there and presented all this, and Tammy Wilson was at that meeting also, and she said the borough mayor just hates criticism and complaining, and she suggested that as many of us as possible call the mayor's office and let him know that we're unhappy with this and we'd like to see it put on hold until it can be more advantageously arranged for shooters to use that place instead of making it smaller and whatever else they were going to do.
I think that's the best advice ever.
That's how things happen.
Thank you. Yes, that is good advice.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
You bet. Bye.
Anyway, I will have it in those five stores, assuming they're all willing to entertain it, and so far I've met with nothing but excitement. I'll also have it at a gun show table this weekend at the TVSA gun show. So,
popular subject. We have another caller.
Oh, we have another caller. You're on the line with Laura and Norm.
Good morning, Laura, Norm. We don't know each other by name particularly, but you're at the range pretty much every time I'm there. And I'm a person who is at least marginally mobily challenged. And I find the getting rid of the gravel pad to get your targets out to the shooting area to be absolutely abhorrent.
That's the thing that got my attention about this project more than anything else did. More than losing the 25% of the firing line even. Losing that gravel pad made absolutely no sense. And the reason they're doing is it because it gives them a small amount of credit towards wetlands remediation.
We come down to dollars.
Well, now we're up against an existing wetlands permit, which requires that this be taken out because it's what the part of what the permit is based on. Again, some public involvement could have stepped in front of that.
That's interesting.
All right, I shall look for your petition.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any more little gems like that that are going to come out from? We have another caller?
No.
We're good? Okay, so continue with...
Well, that's pretty much what I had. If we'll have it at the gun show. We'll have it at these five businesses, any other businesses that are willing to entertain it. And if anybody thinks that they could take that petition to somebody and get more signatures, I'll be glad to give them copies of it. And you can reach me at 322-1452, and I'll try to carry that in my pocket so you don't have to leave a message, but I would appreciate any help we can get on this.
And I will take a petition with me if you have them here. I wanted to ask a couple of questions. Do you, at this point, know how long those petitions will be left out there? Because the borough is moving pretty quickly.
Yeah, we have no drop-dead date on it.
Okay.
It's either a matter of getting enough signatures on it so that we think we can influence this process, or running out of time and having to run it to the mayor's office just to present what we have. There's no date. I would say as quickly as possible.
Okay.
I'd also say we probably have no more than 2 weeks to do what we're doing.
Okay. So we all need to make a trip to the gun store.
Yes.
To go sign a petition and buy ammo.
Go buy more bullets.
Yeah, the gun... You know, I have another question. In your talking to people at the borough or talking about this plan, I'm not sure I understand the concept of half the range being set aside for education use if someone wanted to use it for that. And the reason, and I realize there's supposed to be a berm down the middle, but the reason for that is what qualifications or certifications does somebody need to say, I want to rent that part of the range for education?
I actually probably better not even try to answer the question. I know that's part of the administrative reason for doing what they're doing is to make it available. Last summer, I remember it being closed one morning, one Saturday morning, so that they could do this. But what they tell me is that they have a lot more interest in doing it. And mm-hmm. it's something that needs to be accommodated if mm-hmm. you know, it's something that we should be able to accommodate. But I don't know the requirements.
And that was the YHEC, and I've been involved with that and renting that. So that was the Youth Hunter Education Challenge. And we have to rent the whole range for insurance purposes because we can't be responsible for anything happens if we're sharing the range with the public. And that's that. You had to have $1 million at least of insurance, and you have to add the borough as an additional insured. But no one ever asked us what our qualifications were to be able to put on this program. Yeah. We have a caller?
We have a caller.
Okay. Caller, you're on the line with Laura and Norm.
Yes, hello. I just looked online, and Bryce Ward, the mayor of the Fairbanks North Star Boroughs, contact phone number is, for people who have to dial it, 907-459-1300. And on the borough's website under Bryce Ward Mayor, he also has a link, I guess you can contact through there if you wanted to email. But I agree with the phone calls. Why are the phones ringing off the hook?
907-459-1300. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your show and everything you do. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, my point and my concern is that there's a lot of people out there that are certified instructors. There's a lot of people out there that are not certified instructors and teach people. I would like to see as much teaching as possible in our community, but it's quite possible that that teaching section could be used every weekend, which would then leave only half of the firing points for the public.
Yeah, certainly capacity would become a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, you get cars parked double rows of cars in that lot and people sitting on the concrete blocks waiting for a bench to open up. Mm-hmm. That would really intensify that problem.
Well, if you think about it now, capacity is already a problem with as big as it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's often on weekends during the summertime that you can go there and have to wait upwards 2 hours before you get yourself a bench or a place to go shoot.
Okay, something I should probably inject here. And I've had good conversations with the borough. I'm not going to make them be evil or anything. I wish they'd call back quicker, but we've talked well. They're keeping, in this design, they're keeping the same number of benches, and that's how they feel they're not reducing the capacity. But by doing that, they're having to squeeze the benches together, whereas some of the things that happen out there are going to be much more difficult, as in groups shooting at a bench or two.
Mm-hmm.
We throw a lot of clay pigeons out there. That's going to be tougher. The idea of shooting prone between benches is going to get tougher because of that space. And I think the standard that they're using, which they say is an NRA standard designed for the range, probably involves minimum distances and there's no reason why those distances, I mean, it'd be desirable to keep those distances bigger.
Yeah, yeah. It's 10 feet now, right? You said you...
I think they're irregular. I measured one at 13 feet center to center.
Okay.
And I think they're talking about 8 feet between benches.
Okay,
To lose 25% of your firing line, mm-hmm. you're going to have to shrink the space between the benches quite a bit.
Okay.
Substantially.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and go to our
house.
Okay, all right.
Out in Arizona where the bad men are, the only thing to guide you is an evening star. The roughest, toughest man by far was Ragtime Cowboy Joe. He got his name from singing to the cows and sheep. Every night they say he sings a herd to sleep.
In a bass voice rich and deep, crooning soft and low.
He always sings raggedy music to the cattle as he swings.
back and forward in your saddle on a horse. That is syncopated, gated, there is such a funny meter to the roar of his repeater, how they run. When they hear the fellas come, because the western folks all know he's a highfalutin', rootin', tootin' son of a gun from Arizona, ragtime cowboy Joe.
KFAR, the heartbeat of Alaska, now in full stereo at 97.5 FM, and of course, still at 660 AM.
Fox News, I'm Steve Rappaport. President Biden announcing another $800 million in military aid to Ukraine.
And the United States and our allies and partners are moving as fast as possible to continue to provide Ukraine the forces that they need, the weapons they need, the equipment they need, their forces need to defend their nation.
The U.S. has sent more than $2.5 billion in military aid to Ukraine since Russia invaded. The Florida House of Representatives approving a bill to dissolve Walt Disney World's private government. Under a deal struck more than 50 years ago, the company is allowed to operate its own emergency services, utilities, and infrastructure.
The state Senate passed the bill Wednesday. The push to rescind Disney's special status is a reaction to the company's chief executive promising to use the corporation's muscle to repeal Florida's new law prohibiting gender and sex ed in early elementary school.
Fox's Evan Brown in Miami. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Climate scientists are predicting a dynamic breakup, which combined with a large snowpack throughout Alaska creates a high probability for flooding. According to a report in the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, climatologist Rick Thoman with the University of Alaska Fairbanks Center for Climate Assessment and Policy and Crane Johnson, a hydrologist with the National Weather Service Alaska Pacific River Forecast Center, gave an overview of what Alaskans can expect in the coming weeks. As its name suggests, breakup is defined as the date when river ice breaks down, Johnson said. In other words, it is when rivers transition from ice-covered to freely flowing open water. While breakup signifies warmer temperatures and impending summer, it can also be a tumultuous time of year. There are two types of breakup, Johnson said. The first type is thermal, when ice slowly melts in place and rots or mushes out. The second form is mechanical or dynamic, which is when ice remains hard and breaks in large chunks. Ice jams and therefore ice jam floods are more common during dynamic breakups. This year, Alaska is trending to a dynamic breakup, said Johnson.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
You never know when you'll need your Snowway snowplow. Whether it's an early dump or a late season blizzard, when you move a lot of the white stuff around, it just makes sense to keep your plow in top shape. Ready to move whatever Mother Nature dishes out? You can rely on Rogers Auto Repair, your Snowway dealer, to repair and maintain your plow using Snowway factory original parts. Rogers Auto Repair, located on Dale Road near the airport. Call them today at 907-479-6665.
There's no better way to enjoy the Alaskan outdoors than heading out of town to go camping. When you do, make sure you drop by Frontier Outfitters for all the right equipment to get the most out of your camping experience. Frontier carries the brands you trust, like Mountain Hardware, Kelty, Coleman, Jetboil, Slumberjack, and more. Plus sunglasses by Oakley, Native, and others. You'll see row after row of name brand camping essentials, tents and cookware, sleeping bags, and a wide selection of Garmin GPS as well. If camping is in your future, visit Frontier Outfitters today. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Hi, Steve with Auto Trim Design here. When I hear lights and sirens, I'm reminded of how fortunate we are to have our dedicated and heroic response personnel watching over us. Because many times someone's life is on the line. Chances are we've installed those lights and equipped that vehicle with sirens, comms, and cameras. I'm proud that my team is picked for the dependable installations they need, as it shows how dependable our work is at Auto Trim Design. So if you're looking for accessories to outfit your personal rig, depend on the best. Depend on Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz and our guest Norm, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255, 458-TALK. What's on your mind about firearms today? I'm going to get started on another subject here, but Norm is going to be here the whole hour. Please call in if you have more questions and comments about the Cushman Range renovation project. And don't forget, right after the program, don't go now, stay tuned to the rest of the program, and then go to the gun stores and sign that petition. We have a caller?
We have a caller.
Okay, caller, you're on the line with Laura and Norm.
I hate to monopolize, Laura. This is Ron one more time.
No, you're welcome to call anytime. Multiple
times.
We like you, Ron.
Yeah.
But Norm brought up an issue that I'm pretty familiar with, the shrinkage in distance between firing points. Mm-hmm. And I'm retired, so I can go out in the middle of the week, so it's not terribly critical. But I have noted in the past, because one of my favorite things to do is to do load experimentations with a 338 Lapua. And I know that that is not particularly pleasant for the folks at adjacent benches.
Ah, yeah.
You know, I'm sure there are a lot of people that fall into that category that are using big blasters. And they're fun to shoot and fun to work up loads for. And if you do that, you're going to discourage a lot of shooters.
Interesting, yeah.
So you've seen me out there with my 50 caliber bolt action rifles doing the very same thing.
we're kind of in the same category there, you know, with a muzzle brake that looks like the end of a trombone.
It's a good thing it does, or you wouldn't be able to shoot that firearm.
You're right about that, sir. But anyway, I just wanted to put that point out, because that could cause a significant dampening in encouraging new shooters.
You're absolutely right. Right. Thank you.
All right. Have a nice day.
Okay. Thank you for that call. Thank you. Okay. Let's talk about history. And then if I have time, we'll get into Dr. Gav Schneider's book. That is a much longer discussion. So this day in history, April 21st, but in 1918, the life of the Red Baron ended. And the Red Baron's real name was Manfred Albrecht Freiherr von Richthofen. He was born into a family of Prussian nobles, grew up in the Silesia region of what is now Poland. He attended military school starting at age 11 on the wishes of his father. And by his 18th birthday, he was commissioned as an officer in a German cavalry unit. But with the advent of trench warfare, cavalry was less in demand, and so von Richthofen's regiment was dismounted and reassigned as dispatch runners and field telephone operators. And later, he was ordered to transfer to the Army's supply branch. Now, von Richthofen did not like that, and that wasn't why he wanted to be in the military, and so he applied for a transfer to the Imperial German Army Air Service. And on his application, I read that he wrote, "I have not gone to war in order to collect cheese and eggs, but for another purpose." Now, von Richthofen joined the Air Service in May of 1915 and served as an observer on reconnaissance missions from June to August 1915. And a chance meeting with a German ace fighter pilot, Oswald Behlke, who would later be known as the father of air fighting tactics, led Richthofen to begin training as a pilot. So now it's October 1915. In March of 1916, von Richthofen joined No. 2 Bomber Squadron. And I read at first he was considered a below-average pilot, struggling to control his aircraft, and actually crashed his first flight at the controls. But moving to April of 1916, apparently he improved his flying skills, because flying over Verdun, he downed a French plane. Now, he did not receive credit for that. Now, we're 4 months later in August of 1916, and von Richthofen again meets up with Oswald Behlke, who's now scouting for pilots to join what was one of the first German fighter squadrons. And this is a quote from Wikipedia, which I think tells something of von Richthofen's personality. Richthofen scored his first confirmed victory when he engaged Tom Rees in the skies over Cambrai, France, on September 17, 1916. And this is a little side story, and then I'll continue with the quote. Tom Rees was a British Army officer who served in the Royal Flying Corps during World War I, and he was flying as an observer when Richthofen shot his plane down. And Rees's family did not learn of his death until a month later in November of 1916, and it was on the same morning, they learned about it on the same morning as the funeral for Reese's older brother who died in a tree felling accident. So that was a very sad backstory. But back to the quote about Richthofen. His autobiography states, "I honored the fallen enemy by placing a stone on his beautiful grave. He contacted a jeweler in Berlin and ordered a silver cup engraved with a date and the type of enemy aircraft. He continued to celebrate each of his victories in the same manner until he had 60 cups, by which time the dwindling supply of silver in the blockaded Germany meant that silver cups could no longer be supplied. Richthofen discontinued his orders at this stage rather than accept cups made from base material," unquote. And from another source, a History.com article titled "Aces of Aces, How the Red Baron Became the Most Legendary Fighter Pilot" by Evan Andrews, updated on August 31st, 2018, quote, "Like most pilots, he also had a morbid habit of scrounging souvenirs from the planes he downed, along with the heads of the animals he killed on hunting trips. His home was decorated with fabric, serial numbers, instruments, and machine guns looted from Allied wreckage. He even had a chandelier made from the engine of a French plane," unquote. In October 1916, 2 months after von Richthofen's first confirmed victory, he witnessed his supporter and mentor Oswald Behlke killed in a collision with friendly aircraft. Von Richthofen's brother, Lothar, was credited with 40 victories, and another famous flying ace, Werner Voss, was credited with 48 victories. And both those aces used what I read were spectacular and aerobatic tactics. Von Richthofen was said to be neither a spectacular or an aerobatic pilot. He used tactics referred to as dicta Behlke, learned from his supporter, Oswald Behlke. Quote from Wikipedia, "Von Richthofen was a noted tactician and squadron leader and a fine marksman. Typically, he would dive from above to attack with the advantage of the sun behind him, with other pilots of a squadron covering his rear and flanks," unquote. The dicta Behlke is a list of fundamental area maneuvers of aerial combat that was formulated by von Richthofen's supporter, that German flying ace, Oswald Behlke. Now, Behlke flew one of the first fighter aircrafts and became Germany's foremost flying ace in 1915 and 1916. And because of his success as an ace and his analytical mind, he was tasked with writing a pamphlet on aerial tactics. Now, after completion in June 1916, Behlke's pamphlet on aerial tactics was distributed throughout the German Army's air service. And 2 years later, the French and British militaries created their own aerial combat tactical guides. Today, of course, countries around the world have air combat tactical manuals based on dicta Behlke, but of course updated to today's fighters and capabilities. And you can Google Behlke dicta and read those tactics that he initially listed. I read there are a number of versions on the internet, so maybe take a look at a few because I have no way to verify which are the original ones. But here's a quote, again from Wikipedia, on the Behlke dicta. "If followed assiduously, dicta tactics often led to unseen approach for a surprise attack. As historical study has shown, thus getting in the first shot in an engagement guarantees a successful attack in over 80% of the time." And we have a caller. No, we don't have a caller. We have phone noises. Okay. So remember, put what you read in that historic era of the types of planes and equipments they had back in those days. Now, that dicta was what von Richthofen used to model his success as an ace. And getting back to von Richthofen's life story, he is said to be the ace of aces in World War I. He had been officially credited with 80 air combat victories. Von Richthofen was nicknamed the Red Baron and flew lead in what was called the Flying Circus or the Richthofen's Circus. And the circus analogy comes from the bright colors squadrons painted their planes, and also because they were like a traveling circus in that the unit transferred from one area of Allied activity to another, frequently erecting tents on quick improvised airfields. Now, when von Richthofen became a squadron commander, he decided to have his airplane, which was an Albatross, painted red. And from his autobiography, quote, "For whatever reasons, one fine day I came upon the idea of having my crate painted glaring red. The result was that absolutely everyone could not help but notice my red bird. In fact, my opponents also seemed to not entirely to not be to I'm sorry, also seemed to be not entirely aware of it, unquote. That sentence throws me because it's an odd sentence. I guess if you're not entirely unaware, then you are aware. And we are going to go to break, and we'll finish this up around the corner.
Steve with Auto Trim Design here. When I hear lights and sirens, I'm reminded of how fortunate we are to have our dedicated and heroic response personnel watching over us. Because many times someone's life is on the line. Chances are we've installed those lights and equipped that vehicle with sirens, comms, and cameras. I'm proud that my team is picked for the dependable installations they need, as it shows how dependable our work is at Auto Trim Design. So if you're looking for accessories to outfit your personal rig, depend on the best. Depend on Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
It's time to get out and play with Arctic RV. Time to get your magic carpet to the Alaskan experience on the road. Need parts? Arctic RV has the largest RV parts and accessories selection in the interior. See row after row of every RV part and gadget you can imagine in their huge showroom. Need some TLC in the shop? Schedule your appointment now. Get ready and go. Rough it in style. Arctic RV, your hometown RV sales and service at 30th and Pegger.
KFAR weather.
Clear skies today with highs around 49. East winds around 5 miles per hour. Clear skies and quiet again tonight. Lows dip down to about 31. Daytime highs approaching 52. Tomorrow, sunshine mixed with clouds at times. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 29 degrees.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz and our guest, Norm. KFAR Radio, please call in at 458-8255-458-TALK. What is on your mind about firearms today? And if you have more comments about the South Cushman Range renovation project or the petition that Norm has taken around town for us to sign at the gun stores, please call in and let us know. Now, I'm going to continue with the Red Baron story. Soon after Von Richthofen painted his plane red, other members of his squadron painted their aircraft red, presumably to make their squadron leader less conspicuous and harder for the enemy to identify. So here's another quote. This is how Richthofen wanted his men to fight. Aim for the man and don't miss him. If you're fighting a two-seater, get the observer first until you have silenced the gun. Don't bother about the pilot, unquote. Now, July 6, 1916, von Richthofen sustained a serious head wound during combat. A bullet from a British biplane grazed his head, fractured his skull, temporarily blinding and paralyzing him. He did regain his vision in time to bring his aircraft out of the spin. He made a forced landing in a field in friendly territory, and he went under surgery for this injury multiple times. 19 days later, July 25th, we'll call him the Red Baron now, he returned to service but had to take leave again in early September through October. And it's believed he suffered from post-flight nausea and headaches, as well as a change in temperament, which one article termed as bouts of depression. Though not proven, there's a theory that this head injury played a part in the Red Baron being shot down. So more intriguing is the forensics over the years that question just who shot down the Red Baron. And let me recommend one article, Who Killed the Red Baron? Controversy Still Lives 91 Years Later by Tech Sergeant Stephen Wilson, published April 23, 2009, and you can find it online at ellsworth.af.mil. Okay. Forensic practitioners have studied the placement of the shot that killed the Red Baron, and they've gone over and over the historic eyewitness reports from those who participated in the aerial battle with the Red Baron. So here's one last quote to whet your appetite to read that article. Quote, 91 years later, there's still some lingering doubt over who brought down the highest scoring aviator in World War I. Dr. Miller concluded in his study that it's possible an unknown soldier on the ground fired the golden BB that ended with the Red Baron's death. Virtually all of the guns used to fire on von Richthofen used the same cartridge. The 303 rifle bullet was used by the Lee Enfield service rifle, as well as the Lewis gun and the Vickers machine gun, he said. All we can be sure of is that the entry and exit wounds on Richthofen's body meant that the bullet passed through the heart and other great vessels, and he would not have remained conscious for more than about 30 seconds after being hit. The fatal bullet had to have been fired at von Richthofen at the end of the pursuit, and this is likely to have been at the time when the triplane was observed to turn away from the hill where the Lewis gun batteries were situated, Dr. Miller said in his report, unquote. And why would von Richthofen's biplane have been so close to the ground to allow him to be hit by ground fire? Remember, this is the year 1918. The quote is from Who Killed the Red Baron? Quote, I agree entirely about this, as it was most unusual for Manfred von Richthofen to fly so low over enemy lines in pursuit of Lieutenant May, thus rendering him vulnerable to ground fire. The concussion and skull bone infection that failed to heal would certainly have contributed to von Richthofen's error in judgment. Dr. Miller hopes the historical record will be corrected. This is the same quote. I might add, this is still Dr. Miller, that despite all the evidence that it was not Captain Brown who killed Manfred von Richthofen, but Australian ground fire, many people who should know better still believe that Captain Brown fired the fatal shot, Dr. Miller said, unquote. Now, von Richthofen, the Red Baron, was only 25 years old when he died. From History.com, quote, the Red Baron had been the Allied pilot's most hated adversary, yet in death he was honored like a fallen hero. Anybody would have been proud to have killed von Richthofen in action, a correspondent for the British magazine Aeroplane later wrote. But every member of the Royal Flying Corps would also have been proud to shake his hand had he fallen into captivity alive, unquote. British airmen came in large numbers to pay their respects to the Red Baron as his body lay in a British airplane hangar. He was given full military funeral that included a guard of honor and six Royal Flying Corps pallbearers. Respectfully, a wreath was placed on his grave that read, to our gallant and worthy foe. So that is our history discussion for today. And before I even try to get into the next subject, Dr. Gav Schneider's book, Can I See Your Hands? Let me just make a few announcements. And folks, we've got about 7 minutes left. If you have any last minute calls or questions for Norm about the Range Renovation Project, please call in. Don't forget, the TVSA Gun Show is this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday and 10 to 4 on Sunday at the TVSA Range and Clubhouse. $5 for kids, $4 for active military, and kids under 12 free. And you probably, if you're going to have a table, you probably already got it by now. If you need any other information, call 907-474-4538. I want to make sure everyone knows that Chuck Indereeden has a Defensive Handgun Level 1 course, June 11 and 12. It's going to be at the Fox Range on the Steese Highway. And you'll want to go to his website. I'll give that to you in a minute and sign up for that. And then take that when you can, June 11th and 12th, because the Defensive Handgun Level 2 course is going to be about a month later, July 22nd. 23rd and 24th. So you can go to his website, c4traininggroup.com, or you can call him at 844-966-4079 or email at ceo@c4traininggroup.com. And I know when Chuck has the time, he will be back on the program with us. And don't forget, he teaches the concealed carry classes every month. So his next class is May 28 and 29 coming up here. And go to his website and see how you can sign up. So let's talk about the Friends of NRA dinner. It's going to be May 7. For more information, go to the Friends of NRA alaska.org website and take the link at the top of the page. It says events, and then click when that next page comes up, there'll be a map. Click on Alaska and then click on the date May 7, and all of the information you need will for this May 7th event here in town will be clearly displayed. The event's going to be at the Carlson Center. For more information, it's given there on the website, but I'll give it to you here. It's Troy, call Troy Stoneking at 907-378-6681 or email him at troystoneking@yahoo.com. And don't forget, folks, I keep saying this, but I can't say it too much. The money that is raised at the fundraisings in those dinners comes back into our community to support the firearms, sports, and education that all of us are so adamant about making sure that we provide here locally, so that money gets put to good use. Cowboy shooting. Don't forget about the cowboy shooting. They've gone to their, they're not going to do, they're in the TBSA range shooting now. They've gone to outdoor shooting, so they're going with their Sunday schedule, Sunday the 8th. The outdoor shoot at 2 p.m. and then Sunday the 22nd of May, there's an outdoor shoot. This is at the Fox Range. And don't forget, their general membership meeting is Thursday the 26th. And I think I already told you, I will be there. I went last month. It is hilarious. Montana Kid Hammer talks just like he's an authentic cowboy. I think he's been reincarnated as one. And not only is the meeting interesting, but it's like being in a play. It's just great. And he's got his cowboy clothes on. So if you want to support them, it's at the Aztec Restaurant. I think that's what it's called there on Airport Way. And you can give a call for more information to Montana Kid Hammer, 907-978-2296, or Barlow, who is Don Logan, 907-378-7788. I joined them as a lifetime member, and my cowgirl name is Pistol Shrimp.
You're an awfully cute Pistol Shrimp.
Thank you. That's the deadliest shot in the ocean, right? Remember the program about the Pistol Shrimp? Okay, I don't have much time here to start on Dr. Gav Schneider's book. I'll say a few things about it, but let me just, let's see, what did I do with my notes here? Say one thing. A couple weeks ago, I went to a Fish and Game sponsored lecture with Joe Want. I don't know how many of you out there know who Joe Want is. I was so impressed. It was on brown bear hunting. And I highly recommend that if any of you have the opportunity to take one of his classes, take it. He's going to have one coming up in the right before the fall, I think, on sheep hunting. So, or maybe that one's coming up in this next spring, fall or spring. Keep on the lookout. Get on the Fish and Game mailing list and be on the lookout for that. Joe Want was a guide for 40 years, and he speaks from knowledge and experience, and I learned a lot about stalking the bears from him and gauging various wind conditions between me and where I spot the bear and how to tell the age of a bear from a great distance. He showed us a lot of photographs of bears in typical settings, and he asked us, the students, to decide if it was a male, a female, older, younger. And this was not so easy to do. There were a few we couldn't identify, and that's what we would find in the field. The wind conditions and the scent cones, that was very, very important to me. Proper stalking techniques for the bears. We learned how to think about what happens after our first shot, how to anticipate where the bear will run so we can make effective follow-up shots. That was pretty important to me. We learned from diagrams how to properly skin the bear if we wanted to preserve the hide, and there was just so much more to that lecture. And I asked Joe Want if he would like to come on Shooter's Corner, but he did not. So I cannot bring him here to you listeners. All I can say is if you have the opportunity to listen to one of his discussions at Fishing Gang, please do so. Even more experienced hunters in the room asked questions. Everybody learned something new. And folks, I will be back next week, and we'll spend a lot of time talking about keeping ourselves safe. Have a great weekend, and go sign those petitions.
This has been Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or past episodes of Shooter's Corner, go to KFARradio.com and click on the archives page. For more Shooter's Corner on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.